Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 40% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 40% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
Hey, what's happening, everybody? Happy Friday to all of you. Happy Football Friday to all of you. We've got basketball, we've got baseball, but we are less than 2 weeks away. The countdown is on, Seth Payne. We are 13 days away from the start of the NFL season, and there were players on a field last night thudding each other. They weren't hitting and tackling each other, but the mode that O'Brien set his video game to last night was thud mode.
Except for Lonnie Johnson, who injured somebody by tackling.
He injured Chad Johnson. It happened right on the sideline near where we were all sitting in the media. And I'm like, wait, whoa, whoa, whoa. That was like an actual tackle. Like he came up and hit. I sure hope Chad Hansen doesn't get. Oh, yeah. No, Chad Hansen's getting up slowly. And they're looking at his shoulder. And wow, they looked at his shoulder for 15 minutes. They actually had to get out the tent. The injury tent.
They were doing everything. It sounded like from your descriptions and everybody else was there, it sounded like they were trying to do as many things as possible, like an actual game day operation.
Up to and including the fact that there were no fans in there. That'll feel like week two of the season when they play the Baltimore Ravens. But yes, Seth, last night, the scrimmage, and it went on as planned. We'll hear from Bill O'Brien on the decision to scrimmage last night, because as we know, there were nine NFL teams yesterday, as we welcome you in on a Friday, that chose not to practice yesterday as part of the ongoing protest for social justice. There were a lot of elements of what you would see on a normal game day. The team came out and warmed up. They went back in the locker room after warm-ups, and then they suited up and came out. And there was a PA announcer there who introduced them as a team, but announced them coming in. The head coach of your Houston Texans is Bill O'Brien. They were stuff throughout the scrimmage as well, like down and Houston Texans first down.
Let me ask you, when they introduced O'Brien, cheers or boos?
There were 10 of us in the media. We all booed, of course, because we had to have it simulate an actual game day. We wanted it to be as realistic as possible.
You guys actually.
And then Bill O'Brien
the
told Aaron Wilson, "You suck too." That's what he.
Yeah.
He
Aaron Wilson was hanging over the tunnel, screaming at O'Brien as he left, trying to simulate everything. Right.
McClain's over there. You suck, O'Brien. Hey, you suck too. Everybody was in mid-season form.
Pathetic, O'Brien. They let John McClain say vocally what he's usually saying on Twitter during the games.
That would be enough to trigger O'Brien. Yeah.
Well, the rule is in the press box, for those of you who don't know, you're not allowed to cheer in the press box. You're not supposed to cheer, boo, anything like that. You're supposed to keep it a relatively clean environment.
Yep.
But you guys weren't sitting in the press box. You were sitting in the 100 level there.
We were in 106 and 107, about 15 or 20 rows up, socially distant. Yes.
I saw that John Perry, the receivers coach, at one point tried to get you guys to do the wave.
Did he? I know he was.
Yeah, maybe you were. Oh, you're probably off getting a hot dog or something.
I asked about that. I'm like, will concessions be open? Because I would like to practice that part. We do like to eat in the media. But it was an interesting night. Yeah, they simulated a lot of the things that you would see in an actual game. It was as far as the scrimmage goes, they actually did keep score. It was the number one offense versus the number two defense, and the number two offense versus the number one defense. So as you can imagine, it was a much better night for Deshaun Watson than it was for A.J. McCarron. But the big story hanging over all of this was the possibility throughout the day, including, I mean, John McClain himself speculated when he came on Within the Loop that he said he would be surprised if the scrimmage went on as planned because of the various protests going on around all sports. There were seven baseball games canceled or postponed last night. We know the NBA playoffs were postponed for another night. It looks like the Rockets are going to be starting back up again tomorrow. That was what was being speculated in the Chronicle. Not speculated. There appears to be good information. Here is Bill O'Brien, though, on the Texans deciding to move forward with their scrimmage last night.
We spoke with players, and we just felt, you know, relative to everything that's going on, we had some good discussions today. These are ongoing discussions. You know, as a team, we decided that we wanted to go out there and scrimmage, get something done. We play 2 weeks from now, so we felt like that was important. We also felt like it was important to give the guys time to talk about things. You know, like you said, Kenny and Michael and you know, JJ and Deshaun and a lot of guys spoke there at the end. It wasn't just two guys. So I don't know what they spoke about, but we'll reconvene here on Saturday and we'll figure some things out moving forward.
All right. So Seth, what he's referring to there was the other part that was very intriguing. After the scrimmage was over, the coaches and the staff all went into the locker room. The players stayed out on the field, and they all gathered around the 50-yard line, around midfield. And the entire roster went to one knee to listen to Kenny Stills speak to the team. Now, we couldn't hear what he was saying, and we were allowed to stay in there to watch probably about 5 or 10 minutes of the team conferring over racial inequality and social justice issues. Kenny Stills was holding court with his teammates. The only other ones standing were J.J. Watt and Deshaun Watson. Kenny Stills spoke for about 5 minutes. Then J.J. spoke for at least five, because at that point, that was when we were required to leave. We were ushered out at that point. We had to leave the stadium, and J.J. was still talking to the team. I don't know if Deshaun ever spoke, because we were gone by then.
Michael Thomas spoke as well.
Okay.
According to other people that saw him speak. Yeah. So, yeah, that was, nobody could hear what they're talking about there. I think that, JJ is from Wisconsin, and obviously Kenosha is where all this just horrible, horrible stuff has happened over the last few days. And I think that if there's one thing about Kenny Stills, as I'm watching the Texans and kind of looking from the outside in, trying to figure out what's going on, you know, Kenny Stills has made enough comments in here where I think I don't want to say he's over the protest part of it. It's that he wants to be sure that he's pushing things forward. And then I think that what happened with the Bucks walking out, and I believe we're calling it a wildcat strike at this point. That's probably the most accurate way to describe it.
Okay.
As the Bucks led this wildcat strike over the last couple days, I think that a lot of the focus is now on saying, hey, the players saying, okay, how can we influence at the very least at the local and the state levels? This is where we have the most influence. You know, and the state attorney general was on the phone with Bucks representation the very night that they walked out. Because in any of these situations where things seem so polarizing, I try to figure out, okay, where is there actually some agreement? And I believe is one of my most conservative emailers. I have several people that email me quite consistently, and there's a guy that's extreme. I don't want to say extremely conservative. He's definitely conservative.
Sure.
And he and I have had conversations about some of this stuff. He went through all of Kenny Stills' points, and the one spot where he agrees with Kenny Stills is on reforming police unions. And again, that it's not like there's a national organization of police that's actually like has power over each and every police department. I think different departments have different issues and different problems. And I think where NFL owners, NBA owners, all of those entities kind of can actually have immediate influences on with their local governing bodies. And I think that's where Kenny Stills is moving towards. It's like, all right, let's enough talking and listening. Let's continue to do that. But then let's also let's have relevant conversations with these people, with local and state legislatures and all of that. So that's the feel I get just from Bill O'Brien's comments and Kenny Still's comments, is that it's now at the point of, all right, let's start. We can have demonstrations, or we can make these gestures, but really, let's get to work. And that's where, if you're completely separate from all the other things as far as whether like the actual social justice side of it, and all you want is there to be football, I think football, basketball, baseball, I think that's where everything's probably going to head. I would be surprised if there are a ton of work stoppages from this point forward, as long as players feel like owners are really listening to them and working alongside them.
Yeah, and for what it's worth, Kenny Stills looked really good in the scrimmage last night. He was,
yeah, so it hasn't been a distraction.
That's kind of my point. That wasn't the shift from social justice all the way back to football. It has not been a distraction for Kenny Stills, who came into camp late, has not practiced a lot. He looked really good. He had two or three good catches. He scored a touchdown in the back of the end zone. Kenny Stills looked really good last night. All right. 6:30 today is when we'll do a deep dive on what I saw at the scrimmage last night. So there were not many eyes inside the stadium there. My eyes were only one of a small number of folks who were in there. So we'll give you my thoughts on what I saw, and Seth reacting to that at 6:30. Hey, remember the Astros? They're our baseball team. We haven't seen them in a couple days, and it's been a heavy couple days around the sports world. They play this weekend, yeah, and it's kind of an important series, and we'll talk about it. We'll dive into it next. Payne and Pendergast with you on a Friday. I'm Sean Pendergast. He is original Texan Seth Payne. And I don't know if you guys remember, we have a baseball team in town. They're called the Houston Astros. It's been a pretty heavy couple days, and part of that is the Astros have not played the last couple of days. As it turns out, Seth, they probably could have just played that series as normal against the Los Angeles Angels instead of cramming a doubleheader into Tuesday and then canceling the fourth game of the series altogether, because Hurricane Laura was kind enough to, at least kind to us, obviously thoughts and prayers to people in Louisiana, but veered east.
Yeah.
And it was business as usual here the last couple of days.
I did have that thought. It's not like I don't have a hot take about it or anything, but I did wonder sometimes with these weather situations, let's say in a normal circumstance where we didn't have like all this other stuff going on, COVID, for instance.
Oh, that's right. There's a coronavirus going on.
I'm always surprised that they make the decision when they do have private jets. I guess, of course, we have more experience with hurricanes around here. We know how that they can veer either towards you or away from you at the last moment. Remember, not too long before Harvey hit, we all thought that San Antonio was going to get the worst of it.
That's right.
I was doing a pregame show at the station, I think, as I recall.
Yeah, they were playing the Saints.
Yeah, and if I hadn't gotten, I was thinking about watching the game at the station, and if I had done that, I don't think I would have gone home for like 4 days. So
I can tell you, because I did the post game for that game, and guess what? I didn't go home for 4 days.
Yeah. True story. That's right, yeah, because we were down. Yeah. I was in my nice little. Instead, luckily, I did leave, and I got to spend a lovely several days in League City.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. So the Astros, who are at the halfway point, a little over the halfway point of the 60-game season here. This is a big series, Seth. If you look, if the Astros, if you're hoping that they keep their streak of division titles alive, at this point, my hopeful goals for this team are to be as healthy as possible come the end of September and just be in the playoffs in some way, shape, or form. Just be in the postseason, because there's really, my guess is, not going to be any sort of true advantage to home field advantage, especially if they move the playoffs into a bubble or a couple of bubbles, as they're talking about doing in baseball. If you hadn't seen that the last couple days, there's serious discussions going on right now of creating a bubble for the American League in California and a bubble for the National League here in the state of Texas. So just get in. Just get into the dance. That said, if you're into them winning the division again, which I get, they play the A's this weekend. It's a three-game series against the A's, who, of course, swept the Astros earlier this year. And right now, Seth, The 2 days off that the Astros have gotten the last couple of days have allowed them to sort of recalibrate and kind of line up their pitching staff a little bit. And this is a staff that has now evolved to where your frontline three are no longer Verlander, Cole, and Greinke as they were going into last year's postseason. Your frontline three are McCullers, Greinke, and Framber Valdez against the hated A's this week? And what's your confidence level in that as your front three in a big series against your division rival this week?
I feel that, you know, Lance isn't, you know, at his peak dominance for sure. But there's hints of it, right? It's just a matter of him kind of feeling his way through. Okay, I was working on my changeup so much that I kind of lost sight of my curveball. Let's get back to the curveball. Okay, now the curveball's looking more like normal. And I feel like by the end of the season, that's going to be a really good situation. I feel fine with him. I think Framber, I'm not going to get ahead of myself. I'm not going to jinx him like I did Belak or anything. But Framber's got more of a track record than Belak.
Well, he's got, you know,
Framber's been around.
He does, and he's just got better stuff. Like Framber has some stuff that he can hang his hat on in situations.
Yes.
You know?
So. Yeah. And then Greinke is Greinke. Greinke can kill you with a 54-mile-per-hour pitch or a blistering 86-mile-per-hour fastball.
What's the murder equivalent of getting killed by a 54-hour curveball? Is it being stabbed to death by like a nail file or something like that?
No, it's like if an old lady smothered you with a pillow. instead of you smothering the old lady with the pillow when it's time to go, she smothers you. And you sit there and you're so drunk that you can't stop her. You're like, oh my gosh, I'm being murdered by Fran.
Right.
Ah, damn it.
Edith, get off of me.
Evelyn, stop.
Yeah, Evelyn.
That was my grandma's name.
Yeah, mine was Edith. Yeah. Edith and Helen, my two grandmothers. God rest their souls.
Edith and Helen, those are classic old lady names.
Big
my
time
God.
Old lady names.
Holy crap. They had beehive hairdos and they walked around the house
with
an apron on
they
and
did.
Everything.
They did. Both of those things. Absolutely. The Athletic put the playoff teams into tears, and it was really a little depressing, Seth, to have to keep – it's been a while since we've had to thumb down an article like this and go, okay, where are the Astros? Where are the Astros? Like, usually playoff tiers and things like that, you got to go two or three teams, and you found the Astros by then. They're 11th on the list. Now, this is as of three games ago. They were 11th on this list alongside the Cubs at 10th and 11th. You know, they're in a group that the last of the title contenders – the Astros at the time 15-13, they're 17-14 now. So that feels about right based on what they've done so far this year. They're a fringe title contender right now.
Yeah, there are. I mean, there's two things you can do here. One is you can say, okay, how are they now? How have they been during the season? And I think that makes sense. You put them right about there, about a top the top third or so.
Yeah.
If you were to say, okay, how are they going to become playoff time? You have the thing like the Baseball Reference is saying that the Astros are actually the favorite in the AL to win the World Series.
Seth, I had to check the time and date stamp on that tweet. I had to check the blue check mark on that. So I said, wait, hold on a second. Seth's referring to a tweet from baseballreference.com that put the percentage chance that each of the American League teams could win the American League this year. And they were far and away. They were 14%. The next closest was 9%.
I'll allow it. That
you're
means,
let
you know,
that
Verlander's going to come back. The bats are going to come back. I do like this thing that the Athletic and other teams are doing, or other publications are doing, where they're more into tiers than power rankings these days. Tiers make more sense. I mean, and frankly, I'm so tired of the power ranking format just because part of it is – every time I'm in a supermarket checkout line these days, there's some like special edition glossy magazine that's like 20 top figures of the Bible.
Yeah.
And I'm like, Jesus, we're power ranking the Bible now? Come on. I'm so sick of power ranking.
Admit it. How tempted are you to buy it, though?
Well, I always want to thumb through it just to see if they try to create controversy.
Cheapskate.
By putting, like, you know, like instead
leech.
Of. Yeah, what's that?
You're a leech. You're a parasite.
The clickbait would be like some of these websites do. Instead of putting the runaway favorite at the top, they put something like Kane at the top or somebody. Like some scoundrel in the great. Bible. They actually put him above Jesus.
That's great. All right. There was a scrimmage at NRG Stadium last night for the Texans in which the MVP of this team showed why he's so valuable. So did the backup. He also showed why the MVP of this team is so valuable. We will get into that. All kinds of thoughts. If you want your primer on where the Texans are right now with under 2 weeks to go till the opener, you will get it in the next segment. Stay there. Seth, I just tweeted out a screen cap of my my COVID testing record at training camp this year. Sadly, my last COVID test was last night before the scrimmage. And I shared it with the world because I'm really proud of it. 15 for 15. Perfection. Negative tests.
This is honestly, it's kind of astounding that the testing has gone as well as it has so far. Yeah. I'm knocking on wood as I say that. I get a little bit nervous that there almost seems to be, as several people pointed out yesterday, I think I saw Rivers McCown pointed out, there gets to be a little too much of a mission accomplished feel to this, where you're saying mission accomplished before you even actually played NFL games. But the huge concern was, okay, what's going to happen when teams start traveling? And so far, it wouldn't have mattered because the other teams don't have any positive cases on their on their teams. So you have a bunch of teams that are – and I think, too, this is maybe a misconception that some people have about NFL travel. It's not like baseball. It's not like basketball. Players have very little time
to go out and
do anything like Clevenger.
Yeah.
Right. So, like, in baseball, basketball, you're in cities well, basketball, you're on the road for multiple days in multiple cities. Baseball, you're actually sitting in the same city for multiple days with all kinds of time to go out and get into mischief. Football, it's not like that. I mean, it's a damn near a bubble anyway in a normal travel situation where you might only have 2 or 3 hours of free time from the time you actually get to the hotel and meeting starts. So as long as players continue to be responsible in their home cities, I'm not worried about the travel aspect of
it. If the virus doesn't find its way, if you're sending a bunch of guys out there who have been testing negative, then obviously this season has a great chance of playing out. The league is doing a tremendous, tremendous job of keeping the coronavirus out of the building in the NFL. I can't say. And having experienced the last couple weeks, Seth, being over there and being part of the process, I couldn't be more impressed with how streamlined the whole thing is. It's really remarkable when you consider the number of people they've got to get through there every single day to get tested and then get moved on to wherever it is they are stationed to do their jobs, whether it's players on the field, coaches coaching them, media doing our job, all the various staff. If you are an employee that's on that campus, you've got to get tested every day.
I'd love, since we all talk about, okay, what's going to extend beyond this, what COVID restrictions are we likely to keep afterwards, if there's one thing that I would love to see, it's that even with the normal flu, the normal common cold, all those illnesses, you always see these stats, right, about how much productivity this costs the American worker or businesses and everything. Yeah. I wonder with streamlined testing and everything, if it gets to the point where more just even with flu testing that you can do a better job of telling people to stay home from work. Back when we get to just the normal old flu, it's a whole lot. Like, you think about the Patriots, when they got their asses beat by the Texans last year, half their team had the flu.
That's right.
Like, I would imagine teams moving forward might start enacting a lot of this more extreme testing for the flu virus, because you realize now, okay, maybe some guys have it and are barely symptomatic, and yet they pass it on to 5 or 6 guys on the team, and then all of a sudden you're losing 1 or 2 games during the regular season because of it.
Well, and I can tell you, I think if you were to ask coaches about that, the thing they would be worried about is, okay, well, how much is that going to, what's the benefit of it, and how much is it going to eat into the time I get with the players every day? I can tell you right now, it was the most efficient medical operation I've ever been a part of. You know, the most efficient, operation's the wrong word, like not surgical procedure, but like the most efficient execution of a process medically that I've ever seen. Seth, when I tell you that the whole thing, like for those of us, we had 10 media members every day that we would walk over from the bubble. We'd meet at the bubble. We'd go over the bridge, over Kirby, over to the stadium, and there's a trailer outside the stadium. And then we would line up and in a socially distant line, 6 feet from each other, and we would sign in. Jeff Kaplan would be there to cross us each off the list. We'd put some hand sanitizer on, and then they would send us in to get our temperature taken, get tested. When I tell you right now that it took literally less than 5 minutes to get all 10 of us media members through the entire process once we were over the bridge at Kirby, 5 minutes is probably overestimating it. It was super, super efficient. So I think your point is a good one. Because if they run it the same way they ran this COVID stuff, it's something where like maybe 10 or 15 minutes total a day to get all the players through there could prevent something that, in your point is a great one about the Patriots, might have prevented them from losing a football game.
And having to take – well, just even think of the – think about what they did to come down here and play that game. They took two jets.
Two planes, yeah.
So – which I'm guessing is less efficient than taking one jet. So just the cost of that
it
charter
sure
flight alone –
sure more expensive.
Yeah.
Jet fuel ain't cheap,
yeah.
man.
So so I'm saying, like, just the cost of that flight alone, yeah. you know, is going to justify all the expense testing. And, yeah, plus the way it works in an NFL facility usually – is like guys have different times for their workouts in the morning,
yeah.
depending on when they sign up. So guys are rolling in. It's not like everybody has to sit there waiting in a line
yep.
for 15 minutes.
All right, so let's get to the scrimmage from last night. Ben, mood music, please. So it was a scrimmage inside NRG Stadium. Seth, the first thing I thought of as we were sitting down in Section 106 to get ready to watch this was that, man, this thing almost got canceled today. And if someone had told you as recently as 5 days ago, hey, the scrimmage might get canceled on Thursday. What would the first thing you would have filled in the blank as to the reason why it would have been canceled been? It would have been the coronavirus. That's generally speaking what's been postponing or canceling things over the last couple of months. The coronavirus didn't even crack the it barely cracked the top three as to reasons why this scrimmage almost didn't happen. Hurricane Laura almost got this thing canceled, but it veered to the east, and so weather was fine. Social justice initiatives almost at least start a discussion of postponing this scrimmage. Didn't happen. They had it last night. I just thought it was ironic, like the coronavirus, this thing that's lurked over the entire, the thing that everybody has thought could plunder the NFL season wasn't even in the top two of reasons why this scrimmage almost didn't happen.
It's a little bit of an afterthought.
Yes.
Is it more of a nuisance or something?
Yeah. Yeah. It's why, which I think goes back to, I think it speaks to how well the league has handled it. They have really kind of put it in the background as something that is a threat. You don't want to underestimate it, obviously.
I wonder, yeah, as far as things that might extend forward into just like normal flu prevention in ensuing years, I'm guessing keeping 70,000 people out of the stands isn't going to be one of those things.
That will not. No, that is a far more expensive solution, for sure. All right, so let's get to the scrimmage. Players who didn't play in the scrimmage, just so everybody's got the full disclosure, J.J. Watt.
Did J.J. warm up?
He did not. I didn't see him suited up and warming up. In fact, I didn't see him on the sidelines until after the game when they were talking about the social justice stuff.
All is lost.
Yeah. it does feel weird that the days where he's not out there at all with them, where he's working out, you know, I've said this before, it feels a little like that Charles Jefferson line in Fast Times at Ridgemont High, the star football player on the high school team, where the kid at the arcade goes, "Wow, I thought he just flew in for games." And it does feel like that with J.J. a little bit when he's not out there. But J.J. didn't play, not a surprise. Brandon Cooks didn't play. I don't think a big surprise. He's been handled with care throughout this training camp. When he's played, he's looked good. Kiki Kuti, still banged up. Dylan Cole, I'm a little concerned about Dylan Cole, Seth. He's suited up. He's been in pads. He has not done anything football-wise yet. In my barely educated eye at looking at these things, he doesn't look like he's moving like Dylan Cole quite yet. He's coming off an ACL. I don't know. I don't know where I'm at with Dylan Cole being ready for the start of the season.
And they did actually, they signed a veteran linebacker a few
Derek
days
Bates.
Ago. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. And he did play last night.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, number 47 in your programs if you need him.
So, number one in your hearts.
That's right.
And once I learn his name.
Yeah. So Dylan Cole, not out there. Jonathan Grenard, not out there. I think that's, he's a rookie, so that to me is clearly an injury issue. No Phillip Gaines, no Cullen Gillespie, who has not practiced since the very first practice. He left the first practice with a limp, and then since then has been at every practice off to the side with a sleeve over his right leg.
Really?
Yes. Yes.
Because I know...
And no Isaiah Coulter, that's the last one. Go ahead, your thoughts on Gillespie.
The Gillespie I'm just intrigued by because he's... He's exactly what you want in a modern fullback, except for potentially the blocking part, because we don't know exactly. We just haven't seen enough of him out there, like, trying to block on conventional power plays and lead plays and all those things. But he's very adept as a wide receiver, or as a receiver, at least as far as we've seen in practice. You know, these days in the NFL, if you have a fullback out there, you want to be a Juszczyk type that can actually catch the ball, too, because then you really put teams in a bind. When you have two backs in the backfield and they're both running backs, it doesn't really put teams in as much of a bind. Nobody respects David Johnson or Duke Johnson as lead blockers. That's just not what they do.
That's interesting. So that's interesting, though. Not to interrupt you, Seth, but just while you're saying that, Does the threat of two of them as receivers being out there together sort of counterbalance what it is you're talking about?
It does. I mean, it's a different threat.
Yeah.
It's just not the same. I see sometimes where people say, well, you've got two running backs in the backfield. Now they don't know whether to defend the run or the pass. I'm like, well, yeah, because defending the run's going to be easy. There's two guys in the backfield, and neither of them are actual run blockers. So it becomes a lot easier to defend the run, especially if you're out there in nickel or dime. If you've got a guy like Colin Gillespie out there, it becomes a lot harder to defend the pass if he can also to both stop the run and defend the pass.
Yeah.
I would actually be, if I'm a defensive coordinator, I'm in more of a bind and I'm more concerned about a really good pass catching fullback out there than I am by having two tailbacks. Ooh,
I smell a war room brawl coming on between you and Clint Sterner, Clint Sterner and John Harris practically had their pants around their ankles last Saturday talking about 20 personnel with this team.
No, I know, and it's exciting, and you can do fun stuff out of it, but there's a reason it's not a staple for teams. A lot of teams, some teams will use it more heavily than others, but it's not like they line up there. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe they can show me the example of a team that's gone out there and run 30 or 40 snaps of a two tailback set the entire game. It's a very nice mix-up. Or a change of pace, but it's not the end-all, be-all as I see it.
Have those teams had David and Duke Johnson in the backfield? I think not.
Oh, okay, well, now I'm blanking. I'll find you the best example.
Okay, cool, cool.
Yeah. I mean, the thing about the New Orleans Saints over the past decade, where at various times they've had, like, four starter caliber tailbacks on their team at any given time.
I'm just tweaking you. So let's get to actual football. Deshaun Watson looked sublime last night. He looked really, really good. Now, he was going against the number two defense all night, so it's probably just standard fare that he should look good, but he destroyed the twos all night long. A couple of TDs. Kenny Stills, as I mentioned earlier, he beat Gary and Conley on a pattern. And then Deshaun scored on an RPO inside the 10-yard line. Bill O'Brien on Deshaun's performance.
Yeah, it was good. I thought he did some good things. He was in, you know, he was put into some tough situations. He had fourth and goal at the three. He had, you know, different situations on third down. He was backed up in his own end. I thought he handled it really well. He's had a really good camp, and I thought a lot of the skill guys played well tonight. I thought we were able to get a lot done offensively.
Skill guys who played well, real quick, Seth, and then I want to get your thoughts on what O'Brien said and on Deshaun. Duke Johnson looked super explosive, looked really good. David Johnson continued to look good catching the football. Will Fuller made a spectacular diving catch along the sideline in the first half. He didn't play in the second half. That's part of the ramp up. And then DeAndre Carter has had several kind of sneaky slot catches. He's going to make this team, and I think he's going to be the return guy again. But just circling back to O'Brien on Deshaun, Seth, Deshaun has looked incredible throughout camp. Like, if you're a Texan fan, be really excited about your quarterback. I don't think I'm breaking any news right there.
Yeah, but I think it's notable because Deshaun hasn't always come in and looked all that great the first few weeks of camp. It always looks like he's working his way through cobwebs, or he's like maybe just still looks a little bit like a young quarterback. All the reports this year from you guys and others, like the very few people that are allowed out there at practice, say that it looks very smooth.
Yeah.
The only thing I'd worry about, Sean, is that if that's any kind of indication that maybe the Texans' defense just isn't that good. That's the great unknown, right? Is the defense not presenting enough challenges for Deshaun?
Again, he was going against the twos last night. I don't think many of the guys that he was going against last night are going to be of the caliber he's going to see in, you know, weeks one and two of the regular season. As far as skill guys go, where maybe the red arrow is pointed down next to their name, let's start with the tight ends. Jordan Thomas, bad drop on third down. He's had a couple of drops. His performance has been sort of a kind of a moderate trajectory down as camp has gone on. He came in great shape, but he has not made many of the plays that he did early on in camp. Kyle Waring had the one really good practice earlier this week. He was back to being sort of a non-factor, including he was getting reps with Deshaun last night, Seth, in the first half of the scrimmage. So they clearly wanted to get Waring a look with some NFL caliber talent around him. Didn't really do much. Justin Reed covered him perfectly, which was good to see. And then there was one play on a third down where Deshaun kind of, you know, put some air under a ball down along the near sideline on a third down, probably about 15 yards down the left sideline. Waring turned over one shoulder. Deshaun was throwing it over the other shoulder. I'm going to put that on Waring, not Deshaun.
Well, that's what, yeah.
So not a good night for the tight ends.
Aaron Reese, in his piece, noted that Deshaun did his little, you know, his little pantomime thing. You know, after
you
a
told
guy,
him
after,
to go this way.
He does. Deshaun kind of coaches on the with his.
Yeah, Waring like got a lot of that last night. Yeah,
did he? That's yeah. Oh, come on, Colley, get it together. Don't be Kuti 2.0. You know, where all of a sudden, hey, you've got this extreme physical skill, but they can't trust you to run the right routes.
Yeah,
get this together.
He looks a little overwhelmed right now. Here's O'Brien on the tight end position overall.
I like our tight ends, Aaron. I do. I think that you know, Felsey and Akins have really played well. I think Jordan and Kahale have really improved. I think the Stapleton kid has come in here as an undrafted guy and really done some good things. So, excuse me, I think we have some good guys, and they work hard. They're well coached. Will does a great job with those guys, and they really try to come out and get better every day. I think Fels is a good leader at that position. He's a veteran player who's been around, and he's a very mature guy, very smart guy, and he does a good job from a player leadership standpoint in that room.
So, Seth, I don't know how much deeper they got at this position because I'm not enthused greatly about Thomas or Waring at this point, but I will say one of the huge bright spots of camp has been Jordan Akins, who has been – he's been great. And not just hey, that guy's making catches within the what the play calls for. Like, Jordan Akins has been making several catches throughout camp in 11-on-11 contested drills that are very athletic plays where you go, okay, that guy's making a special kind of play right there.
Yeah, I think the two guys that Bill O'Brien genuinely likes in this tight end group are obviously Akins and Fels.
Right.
And, yeah, like, I don't – that's not even necessarily like he loves them as players or their potential as much as like he just likes the guys they are. He can depend on them.
Trust them.
He likes what they're capable of doing. He trusts them. Yeah. The two guys that I bet O'Brien really wishes he had some preseason games to do are Waring and Jordan Thomas.
Yeah.
And I think honestly, I think Bill O'Brien, the general manager, would be talking to Bill O'Brien, the coach, and saying like, hey, let's get these guys some targets during these preseason games. Let's really show Kahale Waring speed off. Let's show Jordan Thomas's ability to box people out and high point a ball, because we might be able to recoup some of these draft picks with one of these guys. And they're not going to be able to do that. I don't know what the trade market's going to be like for some of the moves that Bill O'Brien pulled last year. You know, when they swapped Xavier Suafilo for Carlos Hyde. I don't know how many of those things are going to happen when there's no film on any of these guys.
Well, yeah, and as we know, teams are now looking at media Twitter accounts to get scouting reports on guys, and I don't feel like I did Bill O'Brien, the general manager, any favors with my tweets about these tight ends, about Jordan Thomas and Kahale Waring. Yeah.
You need to start blowing them up a little bit.
I do. I need Jordan, to talk about how awesome they are.
Jordan Thomas has been getting some love from the local media. For those of you who don't know, there was a reporter in Buffalo who said that without preseason tape on the other 31 teams, the Bills have turned to Twitter and following beat reporters to get intel on potential cut candidates across the league. And I would assume maybe that includes maybe people they might want to keep an eye on and for the trade, they liked them in college or whatever.
Yep.
To which I responded, I just took a screenshot of an article from NFL.com a few years back where it just casually says, hey, Mike Mayock, he showed up at one of the practices for Inside Training Camp Live, and he was blown away today by Ryan Mallett. I saw a legitimate NFL starting quarterback today. Let's see. What did the Boston Herald's Jeff Howe say? He confirmed that Mallett is having his best training camp this summer. Oh, wow. Okay, those are reports I'm seeing on Twitter. Oh, Gerald McCoy told Dave Damashek that Mallett is, quote, going to be special whoever he plays for. Mm-hmm. He's a Tom Brady in the making, and I love Tom Brady. This was after they had a combined practice with the New England Patriots.
I love that.
Be careful. Be very careful, teams that are using Twitter and beat reporters or Mike Mayock.
Yes. Yes.
Your current Raiders GM.
Right, he's a GM of a team now, yeah. Oh,
Mayock would not stop gushing about how incredible Mallett was going to be.
Oh, God. Speaking of backup quarterbacks, Seth, if A.J. McCarron has to quarterback a game this year, granted, he was going against the ones last night, but granted, back for me, there was no J.J. Watt out there with the ones. A.J. McCarron, forget about last night. Like, A.J. McCarron has not looked good this camp. He has not looked, he looks indecisive. He's holding on to the football. He's been inconsistent throwing the football. I don't think it's a coincidence that Cody Kessler was one of the players that the Texans had in for a workout this past week, that they would look at quarterbacks. A.J. McCarron's going to be the backup to start the season because you're just too deep into training camp now with the playbook and everything else. But if the criteria for a backup quarterback to Deshaun Watson is this just has to be a guy who can go win you a couple games if Deshaun gets banged up, Deshaun gets the coronavirus, whatever, I don't know that A.J. McCarron is capable of doing that right now. He's looked, in my opinion, looked awful in camp this year.
What the hell happened to A.J. McCarron? They gave him almost $4 million guaranteed in March.
Yeah.
If this is how you show up.
It's how he repays
us. You get guaranteed money.
Yep.
And then you show up and you're just, you can't be relied upon. Nick Saban is rolling over in his grave because he sleeps in a coffin, I'm convinced. So he's literally rolling over in his grave when he sees these reports of A.J. McCarron being unreliable.
Yeah, unreliable. Practice ended yesterday with A.J. Moore running with the first team on defense at safety. They were mixing and matching a lot of guys out there, I think, just to see what they looked like with good players around them. And A.J. Moore was out there. And A.J. Moore is somebody who's made an impact throughout camp. At safety, he's a guy who's a special team staple on all the coverage teams. But Seth, I think he's got a stranglehold on the third safety spot for this team, and he made a spectacular one-handed pick to close out practice of an A.J. McCarron pass yesterday. So A.J. Moore is huge, huge thumbs up right now for Bill O'Brien. Conversely, it's been a rough camp for Gerrion Conley, who was viewed as one of the starting corners heading into camp. He missed a few practices, presumably because they're at the very least handling him with care. He came into training camp on the PUP list. He had surgery on his foot in the offseason. He's been running almost exclusively with the second team throughout the latter part of training camp, including last night, and he was beaten badly by Kenny Stills on a touchdown last night from Deshaun Watson. Seth, let's play a little game here and see if we can uncover Bill O'Brien's true feelings on Gerrion Conley.
Yeah, I think he's working hard. I think he's improved. I thought he made a couple of plays tonight from what I could see standing behind the offense. I think he's working hard to get better and better and get himself ready to go for the first game. He started, like you said, he started on PUP. He's come off of PUP, and it's a work in progress, but I think he's definitely improving.
Okay. I think if we're going to read the verbal body language, if that makes any sense at all,
it doesn't.
So the verbal body language, I feel like you're good at reading body language from Bill O'Brien.
Yeah.
Which I think he might have a tell. And the tell might be this. We need to analyze this. Is when he starts saying, I think a lot about a player, I think that's a little bit of a tell for Bill O'Brien that maybe he's not all that high on him.
Yeah.
As opposed to some of these other guys that he's pretty assertive about how good a job they're doing.
Yes, and I think when he leads with he's working hard.
Oh.
He leads with he's working. Ben, play that one more time. Let's just see. When he leads with how hard the guy is working.
Yeah, I think he's working hard. I think he's improved.
That's good. We're good. No, that's both tells.
Is that almost like a bless your heart? Bless his heart, you know. Was a heck of a kid.
Bill O'Brien's basically playing poker with the cards facing the rest of the table. When he said, I think he's working hard, is both tells at the same time there. Yeah, because Seth, when he really likes somebody, he'll start in with really good player. Just really good. You know, like he's had a he'll if he likes somebody, he'll start in with some really superlative types of adjectives for the guy.
This is when I started to get a little bit nervous. I got a little bit of that feeling in my stomach that, you know, I welcome it because it means I still care about football, but I don't like the trepidation that comes along with this feeling. The cornerback room and all that it might do to this team this year. If you don't trust Gerrion Conley, hey, no big deal. We've got Vernon Hargraves. Okay. Hey, Lonnie Johnson has improved his foot speed. Okay, I haven't seen it yet in person. I'm not so sure that I feel great about this cornerback room right this moment.
Lonnie Johnson, still handsy.
He's still handsy.
He had a PI on a fourth down last night.
Yeah. So, I mean, right now, Roby's the one guy that you feel good about if he's healthy. Yeah. And then there are a whole lot of question marks with these defensive backs.
Yeah, so a lot of talent, but a lot of question marks. I mean, look, you mentioned Hargraves, Conley, Johnson. Those are two first-round picks and a second-round pick, but they haven't put it all together yet, no doubt about it. All right, those are my observations from training camp. We'll be sprinkling in plenty more from Texans training camp in the scrimmage last night as we roll on here. 4-hour show here on a Friday here on Payne and Pendergast on Sports Radio 610. As we remind you to download the radio.com app so you can bring us with you wherever you go, especially as we get ready for the season with all of our Texans insider access. The Texans, of course, play here on Sports Radio 610. Tillman Fertitta responds to the president's thoughts on the NBA's boycott and what got accomplished from that. It looks like we're going to get basketball back starting
tomorrow.
Wildcat strike. Yeah, that's next.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 40%. Up to 40% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.